You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We show all of these changes to benefit Democrat strongholds as they were suppressing the vote in Republican strongholds. And then we had them sidestepping the law and accepting ballots they should not have accepted. So our experts, and you've spoken about some of them on your show, have done the analysis, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of ballots in each one of these swing states. Because of all this private money, we treated Democrat voters differently than we treated Republican voters. That is a classic, what you call, violation of equal protection, a violation of Bush v. Gore, and the Supreme Court ought to hear that case, and they ought to refuse to accept this election.
December the 1st, 2020. Those are the words of Philip Klein, former Attorney General of Kansas, now the director of the Amistad Project, and he was appearing on Newsmax TV, saying our investigation shows what we call the blood in the street. It's after the crime is committed. And what evidence is there to show that a crime has been committed? And he says we have the evidence. And based on the evidence we have right now, this election should be tossed out all across the board. Will that happen? We're going to break down his remarks in more detail a little bit later over the next 2 hours. But I want to point out to you that reportedly, and I say reportedly because I do not have any independent confirmation myself, the FBI is looking at the very evidence uncovered by Philip Klein and the Amistad investigators. And they're looking at the money trail. Follow the money. That's what they're doing. And all the hundreds of millions of dollars that got poured into election offices by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. And how the money was used, what was the intent? The Amistad Project is challenging the presidential election results in 6 swing states. That's where they've been focusing a lot of their attention. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Nevada, Georgia, and Arizona. Now, I know there are those out there saying, get off of it, Larry. It's done. Just be done with it. You know, the last survey I saw said only 3% of those who voted for Trump believe this was a fair election. 3%. There are in the midst Republicans that carry an R after their name. They may even serve in elected office. And they're also willing to say, let's just move on. Whether or not any of this information is going to change or overturn anything, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. Can they be answered in time? And while we're looking at that, do not forget what's happening in Georgia. The Senate runoff between a Republican and Democrat for 2 different U.S. Senate seats. They are currently held by the Republicans. Let me share this with you. According to the State Voting System Implementation Manager, already for that January 5 runoff, they have received 940,000 mail-in ballots have been requested. Folks asking, mail me a ballot. I want to vote. Absentee. Out of that number, which they've already sent out previously, about 1,000 have been returned so far. A trickle, but they expect, of course, a flood later. Oh, yes, the late-coming absentee ballots. In the meantime, a district judge, of course, the other day issued a federal court order to stop officials in Georgia from performing a software update that would wipe or reset the Fulton voting counting machines. And in the midst of that, we also have the Secretary of Georgia upset that Fulton County, once again, is behind in presenting evidence. The Georgia Secretary of State Fulton County, home to Atlanta, said, we are getting a little tired of always having to wait on Fulton County, putting up with their dysfunction. Georgia currently nearing 50 counties completed in a recount, 50 out of 159. Fulton, the largest, still not complete. Well, what do you think is going on behind the scenes? And then, of course, we cannot forget COVID. It's in your face every day. And now the scenario is changing, but the mainstream media does not want you to know the change. If you watch them and only them, you're never going to hear what I'm going to share with you. That's coming up in our first segment. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Businesses, restaurants, nursing homes need to be free of COVID. So you should be contacting Wellington Environmental. A professionally trained team will disinfect your facility using powerful but safe disinfectants. And here's something new. Wellington has a line of foggers that you can use to disinfect your own facility. These foggers are in high demand, but Wellington Environmental has some for now. They cost about $500. But my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. You save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional disinfecting, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Run, run, run with a railroad when their backs are turned. Run, run, run with a railroad when their backs are turned.
Run, run, run with a railroad.
Get out of their sight.
When the engine turns, then you gotta move on. And you
gotta move on at night.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Close the bars and keep the schools open is what we really say. If you look at the data, the spread among children and from children is not really very big at all, not like one would have suspected. So let's try to get the kids back.
So those are the words of Dr. Fauci. And every time he says something the mainstream media loves, they will blast it wall-to-wall coverage. But he decided Sunday to start saying, you know, we don't really need to keep these schools closed. Close the bars, but keep the schools open. He said, we're not really having the issue with the kids. His specific remarks, let me read some details off of a transcript. He said, we say it not being facetiously or having a soundbite or anything, but, you know, close the bars, keep the schools open is what we really say. Obviously, you don't have one size fits all, but as I've said in the past, and you've accurately quoted me, he's on with Martha Raddatz at ABC, the default position should be as best as possible, within reason, to keep the children in school, get them back into school. And he then noted the spread of COVID-19 between children was low, especially compared to other areas. And yet, despite those remarks, even ABC World News Tonight, it was on their own network. They ignored the comments that the school should remain open Monday. They didn't bother reporting it. Media Research Center says they just ignored it, as did NBC Nightly News and CBS Evening News. Why? Why? Because it doesn't fit the narrative. We want people to suffer. And by suffering, we keep the kids out of school. That's part of it. But there's another story behind that. But back to your suffering. And then you suffer because you don't know what you can do with your kids. You're trying to hold a job down, and they're constantly home. You don't have any way. And this Zoom learning, not working. not working. And, of course, the other day, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio ordered all the public schools to shut down again, 1 million-plus students. He did that a couple days before Thanksgiving, remember? And he has since turned around and gone another direction. He has now made it clear that, yeah, maybe we don't need to do that. But what we have again is a media ignoring and trying to sell the story that we've got to keep the children out of school and just suffer the consequences. What are we going to see with these kids months down the road for the next school year, the year after, the year after? You know, I had a stat the other day, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't quote the source. Normally, I always try to do that, but it basically found that out of the high school level students in New York City, high school level, we're talking about 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, 80-plus percent of them could not read at 8th grade reading level. And then you throw this in, you shut the schools down, they're supposed to sit at home and learn via Zoom TV. Do you really think that's going to be effective and it's going to work? But while the broadcast networks did run Fauci's complaints about Americans who are upset because they aren't spending Thanksgiving with their families. Yeah, he did say, you're just going to have to not have it. You can't have it the way you did, and that's just what it is right now. And they reported that repeatedly. But then CBS looked at Florida because they were keeping the schools open, and they immediately started arguing against that. No, you should be closing them down. That is what Fauci and others have said, and then they changed their mind again. Let me give you a perfect example. I'm looking at a piece written for The Federalist by Libby Emmons. She says, despite science, Fauci and de Blasio kept schools closed to hurt Trump. That's the headline. Second line, the nation was held hostage to a Biden win, and the education of our kids still held hostage to the interest of teachers' unions. It's got to end. And there's that other storyline I told you is behind this. Teachers' unions. Libby Emmons, in her piece for The Federalist, points out, and I'm going to read direct from it. American school children have been volleyed like ping pong balls since the start of the pandemic. The first indications that a serious plague was heading our way came in the form of hugely terrifying death projections. Those turned out to be false. Then it wasn't long before it also became apparent that kids were not, quote, super spreaders. Yet, Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and national darling, at that time with the mainstream media, I would add, recommended in March schools shut their doors. In March, Fauci said shut the doors. And now you just heard what he said. Well, we've always said, you know, we should keep the kids in school. No, you did not. You did not. You also said there's no sense you wearing a mask. It won't do you any good. And we still don't know if that was not knowledge-based, or was it based in knowledge, or was it based in don't everybody grab up the personal protection gear we're going to need for the emergency teams at the hospitals. But then they quickly came back and said, you didn't need to wear a mask. And then it wasn't shortly after that that we see Fauci sitting in a stadium with four people around him, three or four, maybe part of his own little personal bubble, and he's sitting there with no mask on while they've got theirs on. And again, it's do as we tell you, not as we do. We'll come back to that as well. And de Blasio shut down the New York City schools, reopened them, then shut them down again, now reopening again. The kids are going back and forth like ping-pong balls, as are the parents. There is no wonder that there's a lot of stress in families right now, aside from the economic stress. And suicide rates, we're not seeing any late numbers, but we will see them at some point, and we're going to see that suicide rates are up. We know it is in other countries, particularly Japan. But again, Libby Emmons in her piece for the Federalist referring to teachers' unions. She said Fauci, by April 12th, gave his blessing to de Blasio to keep New York City schools shuttered for the remainder of the school year. And when Florida Governor DeSantis wanted schools to stay open, Fauci balked, stating, if you have a situation where you don't have a real good control over an outbreak and you allow children together, they will likely get infected. That's what he said back in April. What did he just say that I told you? Close the bars, keep the schools open. And I got an issue with the bars. I'll come back to that as well. But Libby Emmons, again in her piece for the Federalist, says, as teachers' unions negotiated with local governments as to how remote learning would operate, teachers in the Seattle area said there's inequity in tech accessibility. There should be no remote learning at all. The L.A. Teachers Union made demands about schools reopening that had nothing to do with COVID-19, but all about social justice curriculum changes and closing charter schools. And then we have Dr. Adlis, part of the Trump administration COVID-19 task force. In June said, those under 18, quote, have little risk whatsoever from this virus. Well, of course, Trump went with that as well, as did Dr. Adlis, and now you see him resigning. That's the way it's presented by all the mainstream media. Dr. Scott Adlis, this is the way it's written by CNN, a highly controversial member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force has resigned from his post in the Trump administration. And then goes on to say, a source familiar what happened told CNN, Adlis turned in his resignation letter to President Trump Monday. As a special government employee, he had a 130-day window in which he could serve, and that window was, this part got buried obviously, technically coming to a close this week. He's going to be gone anyway. So he officially submitted a resignation. But you got to look down into the story to find that. And in his resignation letter, he said, my advice is always focused on minimizing all the harms from both the pandemic, the structural policies themselves, especially to the working class and the poor. And he was on Fox News yesterday celebrating comments from New York Governor Cuomo and Dr. Fauci about reopening schools in that state. Let me take you back to some remarks Adlis made, Dr. Charles Adlis, regarding children and when it came to school and the issue with the virus. And in response to that, you're also going to hear right behind Dr. Charles Adlis, you're going to hear remarks from Nancy Pelosi. Speaker of the House. Or let me put it this way. Speaker of the House for a little bit longer anyway. And in June, these are the remarks Dr. Scott Adlis had said. I said Charles. Dr. Scott Adlis said back in June. The remarks you hear from Pelosi were in July. Listen, please.
Children have virtually zero risk of getting a serious complication, virtually zero risk of dying. You don't lock down the children because you are personally afraid.
The president and his administration are messing with the health of our children. Going back to school presents the biggest risk for the spread of the coronavirus.
Well, now, wait a minute, Nancy. Wait a minute. I thought you said we should follow the science. When it comes to global warming, follow the science. COVID's a more pressing issue right now than global warming, climate change, whatever name you want to put on it. I don't think anyone could disagree with that. Well, I take it back. I guess there are those who would say, oh, no, global science, all that, it's all contributing to COVID, whatever. But they want to follow the science when it fits their narrative. You can't do that. You either accept science or you don't. Now, can scientists differ? Yes, they do. Yes, they can. They can differ in degrees. They can differ 180 degrees, as a matter of fact. But Dr. Scott Atlas said, children are not the concern. He said that in June, even though Dr. Fauci at that time was still saying, close the schools down, they're danger, danger, danger. And now, this last weekend, Dr. Fauci says, no. Close the bars, get the kids back in school. And Nancy Pelosi saying, that is the most dangerous thing you could do. She made her remarks again in July. And she stands by that, as do all the leftists and those getting money from teachers' unions, read Democrats, because they want the money and they're going to go with whatever the teachers' union labor groups are shoving down their throat. Because, again, they're looking for a payback, a money, donations, campaigns. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to share some additional thoughts on closing the bars, opening the schools. But also, let's take a moment and consider Nancy Pelosi, how she is losing her power if she cannot keep in link with the squad, AOC and the rest of them. And at this point, she appears to be on the losing side. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, Republican, New York, coming up.
Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
That legislation would be signed into law today or yesterday if Speaker Pelosi would negotiate in good faith. Instead, she played politics leading up to the election, and she lost. She lost every single toss-up seat in the country. Republicans have picked up numerous seats. We're continuing to pick them up with an Iowa House seat and a California House seat. She is losing her leverage by the day. And I think the reality is, if she can get her votes for Speaker, which is still an open question, she is controlled by the far left and AOC. So she's going to have to go to them to get their approval.
Those are the words of Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, Republican of New York, saying we have a deal. We have a deal in the Senate, and we're simply waiting for Nancy to step up and sign the deal that we can get money out to people that are supporting. Additional aid to small businesses that are suffering. Direct support for K-12 schools. She said that legislation will be signed into law today or even yesterday if Pelosi would negotiate in good faith. But Nancy can't do anything without running back to the far left to say, or ask, I should say, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do because I'm going to remain Speaker of the House? So we're all being, or we, those of you who are suffering, most of the nation, be you a small business person or relying on a job where you've been laid off and it's shut down or it's going to, the way things are going, you're suffering because Nancy Pelosi is playing politics with members of her own party. I've got a piece that was sent to me from the owner of the station. It's out of Hillsdale College, Imprimis. I read a lot of them. This is a professor of medicine at Stanford University. He's an MD and PhD, economics research associate, so forth. He's talking about the COVID fatality rate. He said, we need to distinguish COVID cases from COVID infections. A lot of fear and confusion has resulted from failing to understand the difference. I certainly agree. And the one point he makes, we've been through this before. In early March, the case fatality rate in the U.S. in early March was roughly 3%. Compare that today. The fatality rate of COVID is known to be less than one-half of 1%. The U.N. estimates 130 million will starve this year because of the economic damage from the lockdowns across the world. 82 studies and a fatality rate found it only to be about 0.2% in Santa Clara in California. And also pointing out, COVID fatality rate for people 70 and up is about 4%. About 4% if you're 70 and older. And yet we still have these lockdowns. And we're told by the leaders, this is what you have to do. In fact, the L.A. County Supervisor the other day cast a decisive vote to ban outdoor dining in her county last Tuesday. She said, outside dining is a dangerous situation. We cannot do it. And then you know what she did? Of course you know what she did. She went right then, after she cast that vote, to a restaurant that she goes to often and dined outside before the order was put in effect. So she was doing it before the order went into effect, but she already knew the risk, did she not? And then you got the San Jose, California mayor. And what he told all of his folks to do regarding Thanksgiving. And then what he did. In your face. I'll share that with you when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Got me waking, bone man, waking around the fire. I want a little rain or water that you won't let Jimmy start, big boy. Can't you hear me when I call?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So in the last segment, I told you once again, the leaders will tell you what to do, but they do whatever the damn well please because they are better than you. I told you how the L.A. County Supervisor voted a decisive vote to ban outdoor dining in her county, saying outdoor dining is too dangerous. And then what did she do? Go to one of her favorite restaurants and dine outdoors hours afterwards. But her order was not in effect yet, so she didn't violate her order, but she violated what she said should be observed by everyone. And then the San Jose, California mayor, Sam Liccardo, told everybody, stay home. Don't invite people over. You need to stay this Thanksgiving. Just do it that way. And then came word that he decided to visit his elderly parents' Saratoga home for Thanksgiving. They tell you, you can't do this, but we are the leaders, and we can, and we do. Joining us now, Doug Badger, a member of the Heritage Foundation, expert in public health. Doug, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thank you, Larry. Glad to be here.
Well, let me get first your take on a couple of those cases I just outlined, how those in charge tell us what to do, and yet they go and do whatever the hell they want, and they say they're protecting us. Your response?
Yeah, we could go on and on in this, going back to the racial injustice protests over the summer, where it was okay to engage in those. Even though cities were presumably on lockdown, Governor Newsom dining indoors with California Medical Association lobbyists with no one wearing masks in violation of everything he puts out there. And look, it's what we all kind of know intuitively, you can do lockdowns on a temporary basis in a localized area. Say, at a time if your hospitals are being overrun, it's an emergency, people don't know what else to do. It makes sense, and you can keep them in place for a short period of time. But this idea of the endless lockdown, nobody can go along with that, including the people who impose those orders on others.
And I want to break down, because you wrote a great piece I want to share with the audience here in a moment. Before we get to your article on that, I want to dwell on this for just a moment more. When they're talking about, in our area, we have been told in one of the counties, you cannot dine indoors. So some of the restaurants have outdoor areas, so they put up tents around them because, we've been at 30, 40 degrees and some cold winds, so they put up tents, they drop the flaps so the winds are cut down, they put heaters in there, and I was at one last night. I'm dining not in their indoor dining area because that's prohibited. I'm in their outdoor area that is now an indoor dining area, and I'm dining there. I'm thinking, I'm going to need several more jacks before I can walk. Because I can't figure this out. I'm indoor, but I'm out. I don't know where I am. I mean, it's confusing. And then they also put a time frame. At 10 o'clock, they have to stop serving. Does COVID know what time it is at any point of the day? I'm just asking.
Yeah, it is weird to put a curfew on a virus. I'm not sure that's effective, but maybe you and I don't know enough about science to
right. I think we both know what they're doing. We know what they're trying to do. Now, you wrote a piece that you said, forget the lockdowns, at-home self-testing can work. Give me a breakdown of that.
Sure. I'd love to, Larry. Look, the approach that many leaders, at least around the country, have taken to this is to confine citizens. And you and I have both had a good laugh about how well that works and how much the people who issue these orders actually abide by them themselves. What we should be doing is not confining people, but informing them, letting them have a way to determine what their status is and then to make intelligent decisions as a result. There are already in existence tests that can be done, paper strip tests, that you just put some saliva on, wait 10 minutes, and can tell you whether you are testing positive for COVID. These tests cost about $1 to produce. They can be manufactured at the rate of 10 or 20 million a day. They can be distributed to schools, restaurants, homes, et cetera. And you have the opportunity to know if you're infected. The whole social distancing, mask wearing policy is based on ignorance. I don't know if I'm infected, so I wear a mask to prevent me from infecting others. I don't know if you're infected, so I'm going to stay away from you, at least 6 feet away. And in many cases, I can't be in the same restaurant with you at the indoor dining facility or whatever the rules happen to be. What if we could figure out whether we had it and adjust our behavior accordingly? In other words, what if the government treated us as adults instead of as children?
Oh, well, that you're asking for a lot for some, because some of those that are in government are children anyway. But speaking of that, I've seen some early stats already. Birth rates are going to be substantially down for 2020. So somebody's keeping a six-foot distance, I guess. Now, I'm also looking at a piece you pointed out here, that, and as you said, the lockdown strategy, like the mask mandate, all rests on ignorance. And then you talk about that, how Joe Biden proposed a website that endorses home tests and instant testing, but that, you know, it's still a good way to go. But the bottom part of that is, I ask, still, is it so? I find out I'm okay today. Well, how soon? How often would I have to test myself to know that 10 minutes later I don't have it? I mean, I'm still not sure how effective that would be. I hear what you're saying. It would certainly be better, and therefore I would or wouldn't go out, and I would know what I'm carrying or not carrying.
Yeah, that's right. And look, if you test positive on something like that, you should call your doctor. You should get a test that is more accurate and capable of making a medical diagnosis. But the point is, if we're testing ourselves at a couple of times a week, we're probably going to get a pretty good idea of who's infected and who's not, and we're going to be a lot less likely to spread it to other people than under the current situation where we have these draconian rules in effect that, as you point out, the rulemakers themselves don't follow. I mean, look, nobody is perfectly following these rules, and the virus is continuing to spread at a higher and higher rate.
But then,
yet we've decided we're going to live in a circumstance where we play this elaborate game of dodge the virus and never know whether we have it or don't until we've probably already infected other people.
You're listening to Doug Badger with the Heritage Foundation. Well, to that extent, you mentioned we're seeing more and more cases, but we're also doing more and more testing. So I would expect that to happen. When we start looking at the fear-mongering issue of death and disaster and so forth, I read and shared with the audience earlier a piece that appeared in Imprimis, Hillsdale's College presentation, a professor of medicine at Stanford pointing out, and I know you know these facts as well, but that for fatality rate for those 70 and up is 4%. 4% if you're 70 and older. And this children, we were talking about extensively locking down the schools, and now Fauci is also saying, yeah, close the bars, open the schools, where back in March you say, no, we got to shut the schools. De Blasio's been on, off, on. To me, it's turn signal politics. It's on, it's off. It's on, it's off. It's on. And right now, once again, Fauci is saying, yeah, we open up the schools because now we know children are not that in much danger. Where do we go next?
Yeah, and we've known that for a long period of time. And again, that's another role that these rapid tests can play. If you're testing school kids a couple of times a week, I think a lot of parents who are maybe concerned and worried about sending their children into a setting like that, afraid they're going to get sick, and obviously our friends in the teachers' unions might be a little more willing to go back to a normal rhythm where kids go to school every day, and if they're sick, they stay home.
So we introduced vaccines, so two or three coming down the line quickly. Supposedly efficacy rate up to 94%, 99%, so forth. But the bottom line is, we know every year we have flu vaccines, and they may or may not hit the target. Supposedly this is targeted for that, but then the debate is, well, not just that it's safe, although some say if it comes out of the Trump administration, it's not. But is a vaccine going to resolve everything? I say it's not. We're still going to have this one way or the other. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the CDC has an advisory committee meeting, even as we speak, to talk about how to distribute the first few million doses of vaccines that we hope are going to be on the market before the end of the year. And who's it going to be? Well, it's going to be frontline medical workers. That's clearly important. And the expectation is they're going to recommend it for nursing home residents. And, you know, you have anywhere from 40 to 50% of the deaths are among nursing home residents, so that makes sense. But it's going to take months and months before you have enough people immunized that we've achieved what's called herd immunity, where we basically suppress the virus
We're still looking to the horizon. Doug, I want to...
Yeah, we're still looking probably to next fall, at least
right.
Next summer.
All right.
Assuming everything goes right.
I mean, yeah, that it goes right. Doug, thank you very much for joining us. Doug Badger with the Heritage Foundation, expert in health care. Thanks very much, Doug.
Thank you, Larry.
You bet. When we come back, don't forget the threat from Iran, because Joe Biden apparently isn't that concerned. Senator Cotton is. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Celebrate. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I just can't imagine that the Biden administration, for instance, would lift sanctions against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. The Trump administration imposed those sanctions. The IRGC is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm sure that the Iranian leadership would demand that those sanctions be lifted. The IRGC has its tentacles throughout the Iranian economy. It's why so many Ayatollahs are also multi-billionaires. Is the Biden administration really going to lift sanctions against the shock troops of Iran's terror regime? Are they really going to send hundreds of billions of dollars back to the Ayatollahs?
That is a very serious concern, as expressed by Arkansas U.S. Senator Tom Cotton. He said, whatever Biden is planning on doing at this point is not going to be good for America. Now, we had extensive discussion on this yesterday with Fred Flights, who's done a lot of detailed work regarding Iran and the nuclear deal that Obama signed off on, adding to his legacy that he brought an end to a threat of nuclear weapons from Iran on his watch. Of course, that was in his last year. Anything that happened would be after his watch. But he wanted that as a piece of his legacy. And when Trump went in, he immediately said, we're throwing that out, tearing it up. It's nothing more than an executive order. I'm done with it. And we're going to start imposing sanctions again. And here's Senator Cotton saying, I assume tongue-in-cheek, because I know he's smarter than this. He said, I can't imagine the Biden administration will lift sanctions against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. He knows damn well they will if they get the chance. They will. He said, you're going to lift the sanctions against the shock troops of Iran's terrorist regime? Will we be sending cash again overnight on pallets? Millions and millions and millions of dollars, small denomination, various currencies, so they can spread it throughout the world for terrorist activities, as Obama did. Biden does not think Iran's that big of a deal. Of course, he doesn't think China's a threat either. We need to be watching this, folks. This is something that I want you to be concerned about on a daily basis, in addition to everything else you got. I'm sorry. You're going to have to keep an eye on what Biden does regarding Iran. Oh, in the meantime, Black Lives Matter is having some problems with some of their chapters. The Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation has several chapters complaining. They're revolting. Because, say, we're not getting any financial support. We don't get any financial transparency from you about all this money you're getting. Where's it going? And, in fact, a statement issued by 10 chapters of Black Lives Matter to the Global Network Foundation said, quote, despite years of effort, no acceptable internal process of accountability has ever been produced by Black Lives Matter Global Network. And recent events have undermined the efforts of chapters seeking to democratize its processes and resources. The response from Black Lives Matter Global Network, nothing. Chapters in Washington, Chicago, San Diego, Oklahoma City, Philadelphia, the New York area, Indianapolis, Denver, New Jersey say, give us some details of where you're spending all this money we're helping you raise. Back in June, the Daily Caller reported the BLM Global Network spent millions between July 2017 and June 2019 on consultants and staff compensation, $900,000 on travel, $1.6 million on consultation, $2.1 million on staff. They don't show any types of financial support they gave to local chapters. Well, the BLM major global network says, well, we give them help in kind. We provide people to help them. They're saying, well, we need some money, not just that. In other words, you've got us in the streets pushing BLM and helping raise money, and it's not going to the areas we need it. Well, I'm hoping others inside BLM will also wake up and realize They're not doing what you wanted anyway. When they are in the middle of a neighborhood where a child has been shot down, a black child, and protesting Black Lives Matter, then I will give them more serious attention. But I do think these chapters are recognizing we're being hosed. Really. And you're just now waking up to that. Coming up in the next hour, the Amistad Project claims we've got information, the FBI is relying on it, and we are looking at evidence that could throw out the entire presidential election. Or can it? We'll get into that in more detail. And then Don Lemon Fruitcake on CNN and NNN last night talking about, oh, poor Donald Trump. He's just going to be weeping and suffering so much. You don't want to miss a single minute of the next hour. Let your friends, family, even your enemies know what's coming. It begins with news and commentary. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.